You're listening to a short free clip from the full episode of this week's members-only bonus episode of the Seventh Row podcast. We release full free episodes every 2 weeks, and in the weeks in between, such as this one, we release shorter, more informal bonus episodes for the members who make everything we do at Seventh Row possible. On this week's bonus episode, myself, Orla Smith, and my co-host Alex Heaney discuss Sundance 2022. Our overall thoughts on the festival this year, and also we delve deep into a couple of the fiction films that we liked or didn't like. We discuss the state of American fiction filmmaking at the festival. We talk about films like Lena Dunham's Sharp Stick and Oliver Hermanus's Living and more. What you're listening to now is a short free clip from the full episode. To listen to the whole thing, as well as past bonus episodes, become a member at 7th-row.com/join and enjoy a whole host of other perks. So, Alex, how was Sundance 2022?
It was pretty good. Mostly the docs were good. And it wasn't as colossally bad as last year, but it also maybe didn't have as good fiction films, like a couple of them that were really, really good. They were all kind of like, yeah, it's a 3-star film, which is better than 31-star films, but like last year...
I had a really weird experience at the festival this year where like I was so down on it for a lot of the festival, but then at the end I started to come around to it as we saw some more films, like you said, the docs. Basically the big films were the disappointments, like basically the films that we were looking forward to. I'd say of our best of that we've put on the site a best 10 best films of Sundance 2022 list, and we'll link to that in the show notes. But that list, I think maybe two of them are films that we were excited about. Maybe three, I suppose, 32 Sounds you were excited about. But I mean, I kind of didn't like realize that film was even playing until just before the festival. But when the lineup was announced, I'd say Framing Agnes and Sharp Stick were two films that I was really looking forward to.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the top 10 were basically all discoveries. And then a lot of the films that like had stars or maybe directors we liked were fine. I'd say this was the festival of 3-star films.
Yeah. I mean, I knew who Riley Stearns was, who directed Duel, which was our number 10 film. I kind of like was so-so on his previous film, The Art of Self-Defense. Like, the acting was really good in it, and it had some good ideas. It was kind of funny, but it was also kind of like a 3-star film. Like, it wasn't great. It was like, okay, there's some interesting stuff going on here, but it had a bunch of writing problems. I think this was maybe more tightly written, but maybe the characters were less good.
It's also saved by, like, a really... I mean, not that the film, like, super needed saving, per se, but, like, as you say, the characters are a bit thin in the sense that I think there's more the film could have done with its characters, but Karen Gillan's lead performance is so good that it sort of still... The lead character is still compelling because of her, so that doesn't... That becomes not as much of a problem as it would be with another actress in the role.
Yeah, and, I mean, The Art of Self-Defense had Alessandro Nivola, who's... like really great, and Jesse Eisenberg, who's always good, like an underused Imogen Poots and a bit of a manic pixie dream girl role, so they also definitely helped.
But I think it was kind of difficult to make a top 10 last year. I really remember that being the case.
You mean because there weren't 10 films that we even could consider, you know, putting our weight behind? Though to be fair, we didn't watch a ton of docs last year, and I caught up on a lot of those docs later on, and they probably would have made our list, like the COVID doc by Nanfu Wang. What was that called?
In the Same Breath.
In the Same Breath. That was really good.
Captains of Zatari.
Yeah, it was like a well-made film. Like, I didn't love it, but it was, it probably would have, if we were trying to fill out a top 10 list, it would have been on it.
Yeah, I mean, last year our number 10 was Writing with Fire, which was a doc.
And it was like fine.
Yeah, and that was my impression, was like, what do we put in the 10 slot? This is like a good film about like an interesting thing. Yeah. Sure, put it in there. I think, you know, our number 10 of this year would probably be around number 8 at least of last year. But I think last year we were quite high on the films that we put high up on our list, and our number one film, The Dog Who Wouldn't Be Quiet,
yeah,
is that ended up being our number 11 film of 2021,
yeah,
overall.
And we definitely, that was only just because it was competing with 2020 and 2021 films.
Yeah, but in terms of like American films, American fiction films, the only good American fiction film, well, so I mean, in our list we only had two American fiction films.
What was the Coda other one?
Coda and We're All Going to the World's Fair.
Oh right.
And we all, there was, Pleasure was on the list too, but it was in the World Dramatic Competition despite being set in America, but it's by a Swedish filmmaker.
Right.
And then we had
Luzu was on our list too, wasn't it, which is in the World Dramatic Competition but made by an American who's also Maltese and went to Malta to make it.
Yeah. Oh, well, I did. The one film that I did leave off was Passing, but it's also by Rebecca Hall. It was the US dramatic competition, but it's by Rebecca Hall, who is British. And
I think she has an American passport too. She just grew up in Britain. Her mom, I think, is American. Yeah.
But I think one of the defining characteristics of the American films we liked last year, with the exception of Coda, was that they didn't really have American sensibilities. like, We're All Going to the World's Fair is a weird film.
Yeah.
And Passing is kind of...
It's very European.
It's very European. And Luzu and Pleasure both have those European influences in their own ways. And then we obviously had the documentary Searchers was another American film. But it's a doc. And I think docs are kind of a different case, as we will be exploring with this year. But then this year we had two American fiction films because the pickings were slim.
They were slightly better. I would say we didn't watch as many American films that we hated. We watched a bunch where we were like, that was fine, or that could have been really good, but it wasn't very good.
Yeah, the Festival of Three Star Films.
Yeah.
The difference with this year was at the World Dramatic Competition, which is what we usually look for films to love, for fiction films to love, was also very weak this year.
So bad.
So, I mean, last year, like, it wasn't quite as strong as it has been in previous years, but it still was our number one film, our number four film, and our number six film, and our number eight film were all in the World Dramatic Competition.
Oh, wow. It's really taken a downturn.
We had one this year. Just one. And there was basically only one film we really liked. I mean, I guess you watched more of them than I did. And then a lot of the rest were like, this was good.
Yeah, I mean, some of them were quite good, but they also had like, basically the three-star film problem. I think Klondike was maybe the top contender for possibly being like very good. And it's quite funny because I was watching going, oh, the blocking is really good and this Andrew Haig is going to like it.
And he was the jury president. Or he was on the jury.
No, he was just on the jury. But he presented the award for directing, which went to Klondike. And he was like, well, the blocking is really great in this. I was like, yeah.
He said exquisitely blocked.
So
both of me and Alex had a strong reaction to him saying that, as we know very well how much Andrew Haig loves blocking.
Yes, because when we published my interview with him on Lean on Pete, the headline quote was, blocking is everything. And that's actually on our tote bag too, isn't it? That quote, blocking is everything.
When we were watching all the World Dramatic films, we were trying to work out which ones Andrew Haig would pick. And so we had to obviously paying attention to the blocking in every one of them. So I think, Alex, you weren't surprised that he liked that one.
Yeah, and I mean, Klondike was definitely one of the films where you're watching, you're like, oh, this is somebody who knows what they're doing with a camera. And she's made a couple of other films, so that's sort of not surprising. I think it's about the war zone out there, like Ukraine-Russian border. And this woman is pregnant, and she and her husband decide, even after their house is bombed out and they like it no longer has a front wall, she insists on staying and not like going somewhere safer. And then guess what? That turns out to be a really bad idea. So it has some neat ideas and some neat visual ideas. It's definitely compelling, if a bit slow. But then I just was really frustrated by the characters at the end because I thought they were just behaving really thoughtlessly. And so I lost all sympathy for them.
I mean, one thing, it's kind of like an outlier when you say that the director has made several films. I feel like Sundance is often a festival for like first or second time filmmakers, and you can kind of really tell. And I think it's no coincidence that our favorite world dramatic film this year, Girl Picture, was directed by someone who was making her third feature. Like, I mean, I think we had some problems with the structure of that film script, but yeah. She also didn't write the film, and I think you could tell that it was directed by someone who really knew how to like A, direct a film, but like B, particularly work with actors.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's a film that is basically, you know, about these three teenage girls over the course of three Fridays and one Saturday. You know, the thing about it that makes it really memorable is how rich the characters are. And I think we both sort of like really appreciate one of the characters' stories, who is like a girl who has like never enjoyed sex. And it's sort of like her arc is like trying to work out like, do I just not like sex? Like, am I asexual, or are just like all the men I have slept with terrible at sex? Which is like a dilemma that I've not really seen in a film before, but yeah. Like is a very true dilemma.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing about the World Dramatic Competition is that it's very programmatic. Like, we're going to bring up my little Sundance bingo card that I made as a joke that covers the whole festival. But, like, every world dramatic film, you can pretty much slot into one of these categories. Like, and sometimes it's almost frustratingly so. Like, it makes the programming seem cynical in a way that it's, like, not the film's fault. So
we really need to put this bingo card in the like show notes page for this episode, because people need to be able to download it and use it on every Sundance.
Yeah, program. I mean, even if you didn't do Sundance this year, like if you saw Sundance films in the last 5 years, just like look at the list of all the films that you've seen that were at Sundance, you'll get bingo. But yeah, so
only three on the bingo card weren't crossed off this year. They were Incest, Christopher Abbott Movie, and Pandemic Allegory. The last one's very surprising.
Yeah.
That was the end of this excerpt from our bonus episode on Sundance 2022 and the fiction films in the programme. The full members-only episode goes on for over an hour more, and in it we dig into films such as Sharp Stick and Living, as well as The Midnight Section, Cha-Cha Real Smooth, the Grand Jury Prize winner Nanny, and we also discuss the lack of Indigenous programming at the festival. To listen to the full episode, become a member at seventh-row.com/join. You'll get to listen to our entire podcast archive, gain a host of other perks, and support our work while you do it.